I didn't get the tech time this morning to change the thing on the board here, but go ahead and open your Bibles to John 21. We're going to be looking at John 21, 15 through 19. And I'll have a question. You always start off with a question. All right. How many of you have asked someone in your life, a significant other or friend or family, whoever it is, a question, do you love me? Everybody's asked that question. Everybody's asked that question, right? Between you and Mike, it's one of y'all ain't been poisoned. Swap the plates. Just swap the glasses of tea. So today we're going to look at the question that Jesus asked Peter following his resurrection: do you love me? And that's a loaded question. I mean, if you ask that question, and the common question that you probably get asked if you ask it, sure, right? Sure, yeah, I love you. Sure. So Peter was asked this question three times. And if you look at the dialogue, and we're going to look at it today, and it follows back to the night of Jesus's trials, of course, when Peter denied him three times, and then Jesus asked him this question three times. So there's a parallel there. But we're going to look at Peter's answers in particular, and how he answers that question: do you love me? So let's and again. As I mentioned every class, I'm gonna continue to mention it every class. I want you to read these, and when you read these dialogues, when we go over these dialogues, I want you to answer that question. So when you read it, Jesus is asking you that question. So whenever we looked at when Jesus asked the question, "Who am I?" Remember the question we looked at a few weeks back? Who am I? And we talked about what the answers were about people were going to, you know, the answer was, you are the Christ, you know, you're God's son, you're the Messiah, you're the resurrected Lord. And then I asked a question at the end of the class. Did any of your answers start with the word my? So if you answer, who is Jesus, did your answer start with the word my? Because that's the one we miss sometimes, right? So now when we look at this question that Jesus asked, and he asked the first one, do you love me? If Jesus asked you that question today, would you say, sure? Would that be your answer? Sure. Sure, Jesus, I love you. Anybody have a different answer?
I would say yes, I'm not sure.
Same result, though, right? Okay. Any other answers? A la Peter, right? Yeah, of course I love you. So if you ask, do I, Bill? Interesting. So if you ask that to your significant other, you ask, do you love me? And they say, yes or sure. What would your response be? Would it begin with the word then? Then? And that was the last we heard of Phelps. He disappeared the following day. So follow my commands. You know, do things to show that you love me, right? And we can come up with a list, right? You know, cook, clean, would be one side of it. Ooh, ooh. Huh? Yeah, you did. So when we look at these answers and we look at what Jesus says, I want you to pay close attention to Peter's responses to this and then Jesus' responses. Remember, and Jesus very, very seldom answers a question back. Peter's answers are very leading as he's wanting Jesus to say something back to him. And he gets kind of lackadaisical, for lack of a better term, in his answers. So we want to look at these. I was looking at some jokes that was associated with the phrase, "Do you love me?" And there's a whole bunch of these websites for pastor jokes and all this. This is totally unrelated to "Do you love me?" But I thought it was funny anyway. Said that a pastor had been the pastor of a church for like 50 years and said he was sitting there and there was a guy that, a stalwart member of the church was sitting on the front seat in one of the pews. He'd done fell asleep and said the pastor looked over his wife. She said, "Will you please wake him up?" She looked at the pastor and says, "You want to put him to sleep? You wake him up." I got to remember that one for Joe, right? All right. So now then, let's look at the scripture, and we're going to come back to this. And this come, I believe I copied this out of NIV. I can't remember. So let's set the stage. So Jesus has been resurrected. He's met with him. If you remember in our study on dinners with Jesus, we looked at this meal here that he has with them at the lakeside. So we looked at this meal in depth, and we're gonna kind of play off of that here just in a minute. So John 21, starting with verse 15. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" The other apostles. He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my lambs." A second time he said to him, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" He said to him, "Yes, Lord, you know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Tend my sheep." He said to him a third time, "Simon, son of John, do you love me?" Now notice, Jesus asked the same question all three times. He doesn't change what he asked all three times. And the Greek recording this is the same question all three times. Peter felt hurt because he said to him the third time, "Do you love me?" And he said to him, "Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you." Jesus said to him, "Feed my sheep." So now he's repeating the first answer he gave Peter. "Feed my sheep, tend my sheep, feed my sheep. Very truly, I tell you, when you were younger, you used to fashion your own belt and to go wherever you wish. But when you grow old, you will stretch out your hands and someone else fashion a belt around you and take you where you do not wish to go." And then John adds to this, he said this to indicate the kind of death which he would glorify God. After this, he said to him, "Follow me." And the Greek for "follow me" does not mean walk behind me. It means to follow me as in believe in me and do the work that I do and be a part of me. So it does not mean like walk behind me. All right. So again, this was after Jesus was resurrected and he was sitting there. And Peter, as Peter grows increasingly hurt, his answers change a little bit. "Of course, I love you," and all this. And one guy said, wrote this, he said, "Jesus' questions are important. The same questions asked three times. It must be super important." Super important. Now then, we'll look at it in a minute, and there's a part of this where most people believe that this is part of Jesus being, quote, reinstated or his forgiveness. But I always thought it was interesting that Peter never asked for forgiveness, did he? Did y'all notice that? He never asked Jesus for forgiving to disowning him. I thought that was interesting. So we'll go on. All right. So evidently Peter's missing the point. All right. And we got to get the full picture. So let's look at the whole story right here. So in Luke 22, verses 54 through 62, I want to read this. And this is Luke's account of what happens at the compound of the chief priest during the process of Jesus, one of Jesus's trials that he went through the night before he was crucified. Luke 22, 54 through 62. Then they see Jesus, led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house, and Peter followed at a distance. And when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking closely at him, she said, "This man also was with him." But he denied, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." One. A little later, someone else saw him and said, "You're also one of them." But Peter said, "Man, I'm not. I'm not." And two. And after an interval of about an hour, and still another insisted, saying, "Certainly this man was also with him, for he is too a Galilean." But Peter says, "I do not know what you're talking about." And he immediately, while he was speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter, and Peter remembered the saying of the Lord. And he said to him, "Before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly. That comes from John 22. I mean, Luke 22. Well-known passage, Peter denying it. Peter said to him, remember what Peter said to him in verses 33 through 34. Peter said to him, "Lord, I'm ready to go with you both to prison and death." And Jesus said, "I tell you, Peter, the rooster will crow to this day until you deny me three times that you do not know me." So now then, so here is Peter, and he has essentially answered this question, "Do you love me?" with in an earlier point. Do you love me? Yeah, you know, I'll follow you to prison. I'll follow you all the way to death. And what's Jesus like? "Man, I don't think so. I don't think that's what you're saying, Peter. You know, you're saying that, but are you truly meaning that? Is that what you truly mean? You know, do you love me? Sure, I love you. I'll follow you to the very bitter end." Jesus is like, "Well, really? Let's go on." So Peter told Jesus he would go to prison for him, he would die for him. Sounds serious. Peter tells him to go to jail for him, he would die for him. But then he goes on to deny him three times, as we looked at here. All right. So if you Jesus's first question looked at Peter's current situation. All right. "Peter, do you love me more than the old life as a fisherman? Do you love me more than the guys you've been hanging around with prior to meeting me? Do you love me more than the guys you've hang around with for the last 3 years? Do you love me more than you do them? Or do you like being a fisherman? Because when I left, you went back to being a fisherman. You didn't go preach. You went to be back to being a fisherman again. You went back to what you knew. You went back to what your old lifestyle was. You went back to something that was comfortable for you. Right? You didn't keep on with the ministry, right? So y'all notice that? You didn't follow through and keep on. Now, granted, it was not a great situation around Jerusalem at that time. It was only a couple of days. But still, he reverted back to his old self, right? One guy wrote, he said, "Jesus is reminding Peter that again, inviting him into the work that Jesus started, caring for the point of people to God. Feed them with not only the physical food and the gospel as well. Peter, do you love me?" "Yes, Lord, you know I love you. Take care of my people. Look after my people. Continue the work that I started." "Peter, do you love me?" "You know everything, Lord." "Well, then feed my sheep." This time around, Peter offers no assurances, no jokes, no metaphors, no promises, you know, not going to death, not going to prison or anything like that. One guy wrote this, says, "Peter surrenders this time and acknowledges Jesus' wisdom and grace and the wisdom of who Peter is and the grace of accepting him back as a disciple of someone who continued the work." Goes on to write, and he says, Jesus' response to Peter's response, "Feed my sheep," not only words, but a physical service. So you never see Jesus acknowledging the fact of what Peter says that he loves him, do you? You don't see that. You don't see that. What he's saying is, "I get the fact that you say you love me, Peter. I understand that. But what are you going to do? If you say you love me, what are you going to do? This is what I want you to do. This is how I want you to show your love for me. I don't want the lip service. I want you to go do something. Be active. Serve. Go to feed and seed. Go to food pantry. Serve. You got to serve, right?" goes on to say, Peter, if you love me, serve my people, feed, care for, and guide my people. Don't make empty promises and go for it. I had never heard of this commentary. Y'all ever heard of Scott Daniels and George Lyons? Anybody ever read it? I hadn't either. This was a new one I had when I was looking at this. They said this, that Jesus brought Peter to the fire and asked him three questions as a reminder of the night he betrayed him. He says, Peter went to the fire where the locals were warm, where he was asked the three questions, right? And then Lyons also said, Jesus set up the same scenario, not in a way to embarrass Peter, but to redeem Peter. To assure Peter he still had big plans for him, Jesus was cementing Peter's future in a ministry, not dragging him through his past. I thought that's a pretty good note, right? We get guilty of that sometimes, right? We want to look at people's past, not where they're at for their present. And when the people look for forgiveness or search for forgiveness, we kind of have to drag some of this back past up and drag it through and with us. We can't go to the current time and look at that current time, can we? And I thought that was pretty good. Jesus didn't turn around and say, well, you know what? Just a couple of days ago, you lied, Peter. You told me this and then you denied me. He didn't do that, did he? Didn't do it at all.
Because love doesn't keep track of.
My scores, is it? Absolutely. I agree with that 100%. I think that's a great point.
And he also didn't have to, because Peter showed remorse when it happened. He
Yeah.
just didn't know.
Yeah.
Not then. God knew his heart.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You ever did something and immediately go, oh man. Oh man. Come on, Mike. I'm searching for you, Lane. I'm searching here. So we asked the question before. So Jesus asked that same question to us. Here's a couple of answers. Okay. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, I go to church. Feed my lambs. Do you love me? Yes, Lord, I read my Bible. Tend to my sheep. Church, do you love me? Do you love me? Yes, Lord, I tithe every single week. Feed my sheep. All three answers are good responses, right? There's nothing wrong with going to church, reading your Bible, or tithing. They're good and necessary things, but sometimes we use them as a substitute for going out and serving Jesus. That's very true. You know what? And every one of us is guilty of that. Every single one of us is guilty of that. And you get guilty of that in your personal life too, don't you? You do. Whether it's a text or a phone call or a card or whatever, you substitute in for the things that you really should be doing personally and following through with it. Being the child of God isn't about the words you say, but it's about the way you love God, the way you take care of others, the way you lay down your own life for others and for Jesus. One of the commentaries, John MacArthur, my favorite guy for commentaries, he had a really long commentary, really long commentary. It was really a sermon about what it means for you to die in your personal life. And the word die really isn't a die as in the way we think about dying literally, but it's talking about you, that you abandon or give up what you things you, that you do in your personal life to be able to serve God. And there's a lot of truth in that because it's very, very easy for us to do, whether we're working or we're going to ball games or we're going to play golf or we're going to whatever we do, it's easy to not give up those things of our personal life in order to go serve God. I'll raise my hand to be the first one to say yes, because we all tend to do that. And what MacArthur was saying about it is he says, it's in today's world and times, it's very difficult to spend every single day and every single minute serving God. It says, we have to work. We've got to do this. There's things that we have to do in our life. It says, but there comes times when you need to serve. And those times you need to serve is when we tend to sometimes make these decisions not to serve. We tend to make these decisions not to feed my sheep or take care of my lambs, or take care of my children. Matthew 22:37 says this. Jesus replied, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. The second is like this: love your neighbor as yourself." All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. He continues with these instructions in John 15:12. "This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. No one has greater love than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. I do not call you servants any longer, because your servant does not know what the master is doing. But I have called you friends, because I made known to you everything that I have heard from my Father." Wouldn't you have heard that conversation? It says, we're love God, our neighbor. Don't just tell God and your neighbor you love them. It says, but Jesus' instruction, Jesus' commandment is to love God and your neighbor. He goes on to write, he says, sometimes we get in the way of that. We try to define loving God and neighbor on our own terms, like Peter did when he told Jesus he would go to prison and die for him. Peter's trying to make this grand gesture. So sometimes we stand in the way of loving Jesus like this. That's the problem, and Jesus makes it clear what we're on to do. Lay down your life. This is where it comes in. So Jesus does not want our words or our promises. He wants our goal. He wants our very lives. Jesus wants us to live in the way he did. But we have to first get of our own way. We have to first die ourselves. To live like Christ, we must ask for forgiveness of our sins and leave that life behind and repent. He goes on to write, I think Peter demonstrated that leaving yourself behind, your own opinions, your own desires, is difficult and painful at times. So Peter, at the fire that night, couldn't let go of his natural fears. And there's a part of me that can understand that, right? I mean, you had to be there, right? I mean, it was a bad situation. So here, you know, here's your Lord, here's Jesus Christ being taken away, you know, and I'm sure that was not the most comforting moment he ever spent, right? So one guy wrote this story, and it's a little long, but I'm going to read it to you. So I thought it was pretty good. Said a pastor friend I met in Scotland, Reverend Ruth Turner. Pastor Ruth continued to minister in Northern Ireland and was recently elected district superintendent of the British Isles of the North District. Ruth had also worked in the medical field in cardiology. Said, I met Ruth on my very first day in Scotland. I was picked up at the airport, whisked away to a 2-day prayer conference. And he said, extended periods of time with my eyes closed in a conference was not what I thought I would first do when finishing an extremely long day of traveling, but it was what I was there to do. So pastors from all around the district would share prayer and encouragement. And I remember Ruth sharing her story. She said she was working the light shift in cardiology, seated in front of a display of the monitors, each one of them displaying a different patient's heartbeat. Everything was going well until Ruth looked up to a heart rhythm she was very familiar with, and she knew it was not good. She said she got up and raced to the patient's room. She entered the room. He was sitting on the edge of his bed talking on his cell phone. He saw the concerned look on her face and said, what? Before she could answer, he was thrown back in the bed with a massive heart attack. In comes Ruth with the rest of the team. And he says, you know, obviously there's no place better to be, you know, for cardiology, having a heart attack in front of this team. Everyone well equipped. They had their own roles and more capable of executing their role. Ruth was there, standing over the man ready with the defibrillator. The whole team was there ready for the expertise. She said, there's just one problem. So Ruth told us, you really don't want to be conscious when you're being defibrillated. Said, in fact, you really don't want to be alive. It's an incredibly painful experience. So the team was all there. Ruth is ready. The machine is ready. The man's not. He's lying there, writhing in pain, grasping his chest, clawing his shirt in pain, and the need of help, the need of healing. So Ruth allows this for a couple of seconds before she leans over and yells at him, if you would only die, I could save your life. She said he wouldn't let go, so she hit him anyway, saving his life, and not in a very fun way. Said everyone was ready to go, ready to receive and heal the man, but he got in his own way. Said he got a way of being healed and being redeemed. She goes on to write, she said, I know the fact that we're still doing that today. We're still living our lives, writhing in pain, pulling in our chest, and Jesus is there, holding out his hand and saying, if you would only die for yourself, I could save your life. I already saved your life. Say goodbye to your old self and follow me. Then it
The same passage says, "Very, verily, I tell you, you were younger, you used to fasten your own belt." And he goes on and says, "Peter, to die for yourself and follow me." And he says, he goes on to write, he says, "Church, die for yourself and follow Jesus." He said, "Don't continue this journey on your own." He said, "That's what Jesus is for." He said, "The building, the events and activities, the small group, the classes that goes on at the average church is there for the journey of living for Christ, growing closer to Christ and together. Don't get in your own way. Don't define what love is on your own term. Surrender to Christ like he did for us." I thought that was a pretty good analogy. And, you know, when we, as I started out with the question, when we look at the question, "Do you love me?" we tend to get these canned quick answers. And I was thinking when I was writing this, I'd spent a lot of time on the phone during my career. And on more than one occasion, I've gotten ready to hang up talking to sometimes a female. And you get ready to hang up and go, "Okay, see you later. Bye. I love you." Well, you know that when you do that as a canned answer, it don't have a whole lot of feeling to it, does it? Because if it did, you wouldn't do that. But it's, we get these canned answers sometimes just like that, where we get, where we, you know, sign off on the phone, no matter who we're talking to, "Bye, I love you." We have to be careful as we have these canned answers. We can't do that canned answer in our walk with God, can we? Because it has no meaning. It has no heart to it. It has no basis to it. And when we, you know, when we say that, you know, one of the things that I've heard before a lot of people talking about is, you know, the, when they talk to a minister about salvation is, you know, and I've heard people ask the question, "Do you love the Lord?" I've heard that question asked. But until you understand it, I don't think you can answer that question, can you? Because it's not about, "Yeah, I love you. Sure, Lord, I love you. You know that. Absolutely. Yes. Sure." But that's just a canned answer. That's a baseless answer. So as we go through these questions again, another good question to ask yourself, how would you answer this question? Something to ponder this week. Thoughts, comments? It's hot in here, isn't it?
Do you truly love me? You're going through a trial of illness or whatever it is, and you pray about it. And then you really pray about it. And then you finally surrender. Maybe you do that.
All the time. Yep. We do the same thing in our personal lives too. It's a mimic of it.
You know, in that first verse that you read, 15, and Jesus says, "Simon, son of John, do you truly love me more than these?" You know, I look down at the commentary of James' Bible, and it speculates, you know, "Do you love me more than you love these people?" Talk about the other disciples. Or, "Do you love me more than these disciples love me? Or do you love me more than, you know, the fishing gear?" You know, and it's kind of like, okay, you know, and it says what it thinks is probably most likely. But it's, you know, you kind of wonder if John has written this vaguely, ambiguously, on purpose, so that you're talking about personalizing these questions. Well, do you love me more than these? Well, these could be anything.
Yeah. It
could be anything that we cherish.
He may be pointing to something out there. Maybe pointing to the boats.
Yeah, anything that we cherish in our hearts, anything that we might prioritize or...
I read one commentary and the guy's talking about, says, "What if he was talking about the fish that was laying there for dinner?" That sounds funny, but think about it a second. You know, just, yeah. Not inanimate, but it's something that you could love. Do you love fishing more than you do me?
Do you love anything?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you love anything like that?
So, yeah. So we can personalize that. We can search our own hearts and like that. He's asking, do you love me more than anything else you could possibly point to?
Yeah, fill in the blank. Yeah.
So who's hesitant to answer yes to that? Because I'm hesitant when you say that, because I know there's so many things I do that are not pleasing. So if I say yes, then I'm being kind of a hypocrite or not honest.
That's a good point. Very good point. So you know, again, if you look at, this is a bad analogy. If you look at the average Christian, that's a bad analogy, I know, but I don't know how else to do this, that has a job or a family and a career, you can't physically be out serving with your hands every minute of the waking day, right? Obviously, we're going to work. So I was looking at that and I thought, but you know what? As we work, you can serve, right? So you know, I worked for a corporate company where I couldn't talk about religion. You'd get fired for that quicker than you would for sexual harassment. So I worked for a company you couldn't do that. And I know a lot of people, whether it's in the school system, you have to be real careful what you say, or wherever you're at, you have to be real careful what you say. But there's a lot of things you can do in your work or your home life or your, you know, wherever you're at, that reflects Jesus in you without saying a word. So you can serve while you work, or you can serve while you
tip the waitress.
Yeah. You know, I think I've told this story before. Phyllis and I were in Savannah one time, and we were having a lunch, and we brought the meal, and we stopped, and we just said, you know, our prayer, just as we do for all meals. And we got ready to start eating. The guy sitting next to us said, "Hey, I noticed that." Mm-hmm. You know?
We noticed that. You know, we notice other people, you know.
Because it stands out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
But I always feel like our actions are stronger than our words. What we do, or what we don't do.
I mean, So you may not be able to physically have hands on it every day because you've got work, you've got things, you've got restrictions, and all that.
You know, really, you know, not going to listen to you. They're going to think more about why you're doing what you're doing instead of what you're saying.
Yeah.
I
know at lunch, the last time we go out to eat, we used to have a thing, you know, we get ready to say the blessing. Everybody holds their thumbs up. Last one holds the thumbs up. So when it says the prayer, I'm usually the slowest one. So I do that all the time. And I talk loud. But, and several times after we've said the blessing, you stand there and the waiter will be standing there with the food, you know, more than one occasion. So.
It is a good thing. It's a good thing.
Anything else? Any more comments? How do you love me? Do you love me? Good question for the week. Y'all guys have a great week. Thanks again for coming. Great class today. Like two or three open seats, mainly between me and Ronnie.
Hey, by the way, anybody get a bag last Sunday, Thanksgiving? We still got some down there.
Doing 2 weeks, right?
Thanks.